The word is spelled A-A-L, and it's pronounced all, and it's defined in this way. Dye, red in color, obtained from root of East Indian shrub. Next is Aba, square Arab mantle, see wraps. 2. Cloth woven from hair of camels, goats, etc., used for making Aba mantle. Abaka, accent on the last syllable, fiber from leaf stalk of banana, commonly used in Philippines for making cordage, coarse fabric, straw hats, native name for Manila hemp. Abaissé, French, meaning lowered as hem or waistline. So the dictionary itself begins, but first there is a preface to the reader. This book provides you with a quick and ready reference for more than 10,000 words in, quote, the language of fashion, words associated primarily with wearing apparel and accessories and whatever goes into the making of them. Among other special features of this book, these may be noted. It includes the important stitches, laces, embroideries, and weaves you might be interested to know about, describing them so that you will recognize them at once. This book is no longer than the average novel, yet it carries in its pages the history of mankind. Fashion has always been influenced by modes of transportation, the architecture of a period, and customs of the people. Prosperity and poverty are recorded in the fashions of the ages, as are frugality and extravagance. That from the Fashion Dictionary by Mary Brooks Pickin, published by Funk and Wagnalls in 1957. If we read between the lines, we can tell a number of things about the author: that she has a passion for all that falls under the heading of fashion, that she believes an understanding of clothing is fundamental to understanding who we are as humans, that the making of our clothing is a serious subject and undertaking, and that understanding the fundamentals, the underlying structure, might we say, the pattern of clothing and related articles, will help us make better choices and so feel better about the way we present ourselves as we live our lives. Mary Brooks Pickin grew up in the Midwest and spent a good deal of her life in New York City, and along the way she spent nearly a decade here in Scranton. And the Lackawanna Historical Society is celebrating the achievements of Mary Brooks Pickin at their annual dinner on Thursday, September 29th at Scranton Prep, with special guest speaker Catherine Amoroso Leslie of the Kent State University Fashion School, where she teaches the history of costume and historic textiles and serves as graduate studies coordinator. Dr. Leslie's program is titled Foundations, the Early Life and Career of Mary Brooks Pickin, Vice President and Director of Instruction for the Women's Institute of Domestic Arts and Sciences. The Lackawanna Historical Society wants us to be aware of the prominent accomplishments and important contributions of Mary Brooks Pickin and the Women's Institute, which was founded here in Scranton as a sister school of the International Correspondence School in 1916 to the advancement of women in the United States. This presentation will explore Mary Brooks Pickin's family roots, childhood in Kansas, her education, and first formal teaching experiences at the American College of Dressmaking in Kansas City, Missouri. Through a series of serendipitous connections, Mrs. Pickin came to the attention of International Correspondence School founder Thomas Foster, who sought her talent to spearhead the team that built the foundation for what was considered the largest women's educational institution in the world. In Scranton, Mary's innate creative talent teamed with advertising visionary and future husband G. Lynn Sumner and touched the lives of thousands. Mary Brooks Pickin was the author of nearly 100 books in the course of her career. Catherine Amoroso Leslie has a B.A. from Denison University and an M.A. from Colorado State University. After earning her Ph.D. in textiles and clothing from The Ohio State University, she joined the faculty of Kent State University's Fashion School. With a strong belief that understanding the past informs the future, Dr. Leslie's scholarship explores needlework and hand traditions as well as the businesses associated with the creation of clothing and textiles. She has published numerous academic and popular articles, as well as an encyclopedia, Needlework Through History. For more than 10 years, Dr. Leslie has been researching and writing a biography of the pioneer sewing educator and fashion expert, Mary Brooks Picken. And in anticipation of her return to Scranton, we had a chance to talk by phone with Dr. Leslie about Mary Brooks Picken and how she was drawn to Mary Brooks Picken initially.
I knew the Singer Sewing book, but I didn't know of Mary. And when I was doing my doctoral study at Ohio State, one of the professors was talking about people who need to be researched in our field and said Mary's name. And I really had never heard it before. And she only knew Mary because she went to Stevens College in Columbia, Missouri. And in the 1960s, Mary was involved with the costume collection, the historic fashion collection at that school, and would come to that school. But Dr. Patricia Cunningham at Ohio State, had she not mentioned her, I would have maybe known some of the things she did, but not her as an individual. And I often find when I say that I'm researching her life that people in my field will say, oh, I know the dictionary. Oh, I know the Picken Square, which is a ruler used for pattern making. That's still a copy of it's being sold today. But she as a person and as a figure is not known.
Which is what's so exciting about your work, because you did then plunge right in.
And I didn't really know what I was plunging into with 96 books and living for 90 plus years. The amount of work that she left for us is amazing. And in some ways, I feel that she was lost to history, that, you know, things changed and expectations of what would be expected of women, or what women sort of should be interested in. She got caught up in that and maybe forgotten to a large degree. And so part of my mission in researching her is to bring that back, because with history, it's what was kept or what was rediscovered. You know, when we were in history classes at school, we learned about wars and we learned about presidents and things. And it wasn't until people started looking at other types of people and what their history was that we can have the full range, the full value of the historical narrative. And that includes what women were interested in, what women did to better themselves prior to the second woman's movement, prior to where instead of a nurse or a teacher, you should be a doctor and a businesswoman.
And she was kind of drafted to come here, was she?
She was. She was. She was working for a school that was one of the first correspondence dressmaking schools, that was the American College of Dressmaking in Kansas City. And Thomas Foster and his team at the International Correspondence School wanted to begin a woman's institute, and they searched from the records that I found for about 3 years, looking for the right woman, the right individual, but that would most probably be a woman, to develop this new institute. And serendipity, where Mary Brooks Picken had some connections with the Ladies' Home Journal, and Thomas Foster's team asked the Ladies' Home Journal, do you know of anyone? And that led them to her, and she was invited to come to Scranton. And she came all by herself as a widow and worked in a small house near ICS, writing the textbooks and the lesson plans for what would become the Women's Institute.
And how did she come to acquire all this knowledge and skill and flair?
She also had a knack, a bigger knack than I did, I think, because by 5 years old, she was already constructing clothing. And by 10, she had made an entire layette for her new baby brother. She learned from her mother first, and then at age 10, her family moved near her grandmother, her grandmother was a pioneer in Kansas and knew how to spin and weave naive, and at 10 years old, Mary Brooks Pickens soaked it all up. She then went to school for a short time in Boston and learned dressmaking, and then came back to Kansas City and started her own little shop in her home. She also taught at the YMCA. And then after she was widowed at a very young age, she went to the American College of Dressmaking and began working as an instructor there.
And so she came here being an independent person.
An independent person. And Brooks was her maiden name and Pickens was her married name. But eventually she married G. Lynn Sumner. And so sometimes she would go by Mrs. Sumner, and professionally she went by Mary Brooks Pickens.
And what kind of vision did she have for this new institute that they wanted her to develop?
Well, she had the skill from working at the American College of Dressmaking and answering correspondence letters from the students. She had the skill of being able to boil information down so people could understand it. And so she brought that along with her vast knowledge. But I found in researching her that she really wanted to help women to better themselves, and to, in some ways, she saw women out in the West, pioneer-type women, as living a lonely farm existence. She wanted to provide connections and a sense of accomplishment, that the idea of the community, even if the community never meets each other, it was very important to her. And she took a lot of time, both herself and then in directing the other teachers, to treat each student as if they were a person, as if they had their own needs and needed a connection with someone. And when I've seen the Lackawanna Historical Society has amazing archives, and when I've looked at some of the lesson plans and the, you know, keep going, you're doing great, and things like that, that would connect that person who was maybe, you know, out in the middle of nowhere or maybe in a city, lonely in the city, but looking for a type of community. It was a school that existed in spirit, as well as a school that had to do with mailing in your assignments and such.
How long did she remain in that position?
She came in 1914. It took 2 years to develop all the lesson plans. And originally there was dressmaking, millinery, hat making, and cookery. But over time, they found that the dressmaking was the biggest draw, that was getting the most students. The school took its first student in 1916, and in the fall of 1925, she left and went to New York to become the dressmaking editor for Pictorial Review magazine. So it was 9 years, and about 250,000 women at least had started the course.
That's astonishing.
I know. So, you know, for 250,000 women, which I'm not sure what percentage of the population of the U.S. that was in those mid to late teens, early 20s, this message, both improving your skills and being a part of a school, was important to them, that it's not something that we can talk about the woman's experience in the United States and leave out. People today are very connected with each other with social media and such. That desire to connect with other people is part of the human experience.
And so when you've been doing this research, you see some of the work that was submitted by people?
Yes, by the students. In fact, someone from Texas just sent me a box of some lesson plans and such that were donated to a historical society that didn't want them, and they didn't know what to do with them. And I'm eventually going to forward them to Marianne at the Lackawanna Historical Society. But I see the lessons, what she sent in, and with straight pins, pinning a little sample of what she made, and then, you know, the teacher's response. And Mary Brooks Pickens' letters to the students would begin things like, "Dear friend, The student felt that they were part of something, I believe, and that encouragement. This woman from Texas was never married, from a big ranching family, and she's out in the middle of nowhere, maybe listening to the radio and making her samples.
You were talking about the different waves of the women's movement and Mary's sense of trying to help women in their lives.
Mary's niece, Gretchen Warren, her great niece, said that she was very much against the idea of being called a feminist at the time, you know, let's say in the late 60s, early 70s. She was quite elderly also at that time. But outside of the word, the concept of bettering women's lives is, you know, maybe in our concept of feminism, but that was not her concept. Her concept was to better women within the women's sphere. And that if she worked within that, something that was interesting to women within the women's sphere, but she definitely was involved with things that men were doing. She was also very, very involved and very important in the G. Lynn Sumner Advertising Agency and well-respected within the advertising business in New York in sort of mid-career after she had left Scranton. So she didn't try to overtly challenge roles of men and women. She worked within the sort of the woman's role to raise women. And there's, you know, things about how to dress to, she had, wrote a book under a pseudonym in 1924, Dress and Look Slender. You know, even that idea of how to present yourself and quite a lot about women coming into business and how women should dress to be in business, not to be the president of the company, but be in the place where men were and be taken seriously. I think she wanted to be taken seriously, but she didn't want to be a man.
And of the amazing number of books she put out, mm-hmm. what are the ones that are the lasting ones, the ones that people in your field, for example, as you said, people say they know the dictionary and so forth.
The dictionary, definitely. The dictionary was most recently printed in 1999 by Dover, and the dictionary is still a very important tool, especially for fashion historians and curators in describing things, especially in terms of how they were described in the past. The Singer Sewing Book, versions of what she wrote are still included in recent editions of that book. A small book that she wrote that's really hard to get a hold of, it's called Thimblefuls of Friendliness. And she wrote that in the 1920s before she left Scranton. And it's essays of her philosophy of life, Thimblefuls of Friendliness. And she changed as sort of fashions changed in sewing and needlework, because her last books were about needlepoint in the 1970s, which was right on trend. She was, I believe, in her late 70s, early 80s when she wrote the last book. And many of the books include information that was in the Women's Institute materials. That laid the foundation. Even the dictionary within the Women's Institute materials, there are glossaries that include the dictionary. The dictionary is a really great, great story. She married Harry Picken, and it's anecdotal, maybe true, may not, but that he had tuberculosis when she married him and knew that he was, you know, possibly not going to live very long. And after he passed, she went back to live with her parents, and it's reasonable to think that she would be very upset. And her father was trying to figure out a way to cheer her up, and one day he came home from work and said something about, I don't think Mrs. Webster was around when Webster wrote the dictionary, because it doesn't include a lot of sewing and fashion words. And why don't you start collecting sewing and fashion words? And so she began collecting words and putting them on 3x5 cards in shoe boxes. And this is back in 1910 and 1912. And she added to those shoe boxes for 40 years until her second husband, G. Lynn Sumner, one day said, or a series of days, but suggested that she do something with those words. And those words in 1939 became the language of fashion, which now is the Fashion Dictionary. So cool, I think. Working her way through the grief created a tool, a resource that's still prevalent today. And the idea that rather than, you know, you'd spend some of your time being sad, but to use that productively and then turn out to have it be something that's a masterpiece. It wasn't started to be a book. It wasn't that she set out and said, I'm going to write a dictionary. She was just collecting words. And when she got to the Women's Institute, her editor was from the International Correspondence School, and he just knew mechanical engineering and things like that. And so she used some of those definitions to help him because he was her editor, but she had to teach him about the difference in words and what the sewing words meant.
So language was a fundamental part of it. It isn't just how you address the needle and the cloth and all of that and picking colors.
It's a whole language that's used in fashion that was something that she brought to ICS. And eventually she was first the director of instruction, but she became vice president, and she was on the board of directors, the only woman on the board of directors. And later in her life, she was the first woman trustee for the Fashion Institute of Technology. So she was a woman who worked in the man's world, but she worked with women's subjects. And I think that we often, in our contemporary times, we paint a broad brush and say, oh, domesticity. That domesticity, keeping women down. But it's so, there's so much more to it. And, you know, sewing something, creating something, isn't the same as vacuuming. It's something completely different. And that if we're going to look at women, we need to look at the full breadth of women. And she's, for me, she exemplifies that she didn't set out to be, you know, political or combative. She set out to help women maybe one at a time. And an outgrowth of that was that she was placed in very important, you know, she placed herself or was brought to very important forums and was able to speak for women.
It's very exciting that you will be presenting in Scranton in the building.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait. Especially, I'm hoping to be able to get a tour and to see, because when they built the building in 1921, which cost $1 million and was purchased with 1 year's profits from their school, from the Women's Institute. Her office is in was in the front on the second or third floor, a very prominent place, and there's stained glass windows that were paid for by the Women's Institute students. It was designed by Lamb, I think, the stained glass windows, a very important designer from New York who designed the stained glass windows.
And doesn't that say something when you talk about $1 million and you talk about...
$1 million in 1921 from 1 year's profits. You know, if the people of the contemporary time don't carry a story forward, it's our responsibility to bring it forward, because this is an important story, an important woman in American history that needs to take her place.
And as it happens, you're coming to Scranton to tell this story. But it's so much larger than Scranton.
Because she left Scranton in 1925, and she didn't pass until 81. She went on to do amazing things, was one of the founders of Fashion Group International and the second president. And in the Fashion Group International, which still exists now, in the records, the people who are credited with starting it say Mary Brooks Pickin was behind us. She just wasn't asking for the spotlight. She was one of the founders of the Costume Institute at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Another book that's important is called Dressmakers of France, and it's from the early 1950s, 56, I guess it is, biographies of the designers in the haute couture, all the people that were in the golden age of haute couture, Christian Dior's new look, etc., who were the designers in France. And she worked on that book after the death of her second husband. She used grief to build something.
And it tells the range of her interests, that she could be conversant with what's happening on the international scene at that level and yet care about the Kansas farm wife.
Right. Yeah. And that the same person could be interested in saving money through home sewing and an advertising executive in New York and know people in Paris enough, having good enough connections that she could interview the haute couture and be part of the Fashion Institute of Technology. You know, the ideas of fashion and home sewing being separate, she blows that out of the water. It's a more holistic view. It's not separating and dividing and saying, this is art, this is craft, this is high, this is low.
It's part of the experience, yes.
The experience, the lived experience.
Dr. Catherine Amorosa Leslie, associate professor at Kent State University, the Fashion School and the College of Arts, speaking with us about Mary Brooks Pickin before a presentation to be offered by Dr. Leslie at the annual dinner of the Lackawanna Historical Society, Thursday, September 29th at 6 p.m., to mark the 100th anniversary of the Women's Institute, and the program will be held at Scranton Preparatory School. The title of Dr. Leslie's program is Foundations, the Early Life and Career of Mary Brooks Pickin, Vice President and Director of Instruction for the Women's Institute of Domestic Arts and Sciences. For more information, on the web, LackawannaHistory.org, LackawannaHistory.org. That's the annual dinner of the Lackawanna Historical Society on Thursday, September 29th at 6 p.m., marking the 100th anniversary of the Women's Institute at Scranton Preparatory School, with special guest Dr. Catherine Amorosa Leslie of the Kent State University Fashion School, who is working on a biography of Mary Brooks Pickin, Thursday, September 29th at 6. For more information, on the web, LackawannaHistory.org, LackawannaHistory.org.